Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, June 11th, 2017. This is episode 1395. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Capterra. Capterra helps you find and compare software solutions for your business needs with over 400 software categories from accounting to workflow management. Visit capterra.com/techguy to start your free search today. And by 23andMe, an online genetic analysis company that helps you understand your 23 pairs of chromosomes, your DNA. Get over 75 genetic reports today and start exploring your DNA at 23andMe.com/twit. And by Wistia, the video hosting platform that powers creative communication for more than 300,000 businesses. Start your free account today at Wistia.com. Why, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. What does that mean? Well, it means that we're about to talk technology, computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography, smartphones. We talk about smartwatches. I help you choose new electronics. I help you abuse your current electronics. I help you lose the electronics you're done with. I have a motto. Actually, I didn't realize it, but I've had this motto since 98, but I think I owe it to Walt Mossberg. And by the way, a tip of the hat to Walt Mossberg, the senior technology journalist who just retired. He was at the Wall Street Journal writing the personal tech column for more than 20 years. And he then went off, started his own company, Recode, and he's just retired. He wrote his last column last week. And I didn't realize it, but he republished his first column from 1991 when I was just starting doing technology radio. I'd been a tech reporter for many years, but just started doing this show, in effect, a call-in radio show on tech. And in that very first column, he said, computers don't often work well, but if they don't, it's not your fault. And that's my motto. I guess great minds, or maybe I read it and forgot I'd read it and remembered it, but that's been my motto ever since 1998. If this stuff doesn't work well, the reason is we tend to blame ourselves. We're just, oh, I just don't understand it, or I don't get computers, or I'm just not good at this. And it's not. It's poorly designed hardware and software, because if it were well designed, you'd know how to use it. There's a great, a great designer and usability expert, Donald Norman. And he wrote a wonderful book. What's it called? The Design of Everyday Things? I think so. I'll look it up and I'll put it in the show notes at Tech Guy Labs. But Don Norman is kind of a design guru for many of us. And he says if something's well designed, you should know how to use it. For instance, if you come up to a door and there's a handle for pulling it, well, you know that that door goes in. And if there's a bar for pushing, you know you push that door out, right? And if, heaven forbid, somebody should reverse that and put a handle for pulling on a door that you push, well, that's going to be extremely confusing. Is it your fault that the door doesn't work right? No. The person who put the wrong handle on the door. The cover of The Design of Everyday Things is wonderful because it's a... it's a teapot. Well, a not so well designed teapot because the handle's on the same side as the spout. Now, if anybody's designing a teapot, you put the handle on one side, the spout on the other side, so you can pour it out. Lift my handle and pour me out. But if you were to put the handle on the same side as the spout, it'd be pretty darn hard to pour any tea without burning yourself, right? So his point, and I think he's actually made quite a business of informing the tech industry, he's down in Silicon Valley, and on usability, his point is the way something is designed should make it apparent that this is how you use it. And if it isn't, if you don't really understand it, or if you look at it and you can't figure it out, it's not your fault, it's the designer's fault. And I hope we remember this because, come on, every day in technology, It's as if we're coming up to a door that you push, but it's got a puller on it. I can't tell you how often I'll look at a screen and go, I have no idea what I'm supposed to do here. And I'm a technologist. I use this stuff all the time. It's my business. I really don't understand. I don't understand at all how people survive in this world. Do you have any remotes for your TV? How many? This is a test of a geek. How many remote controls do you have in front of your, you know, on the arm of your couch or in front of your TV? You know, we're about to go on vacation and we have a visitor staying in our, you know, somebody staying in our house to take care of it. And we actually had to write, I've written a manual, 7 or 8 page manual, and we had to write post-it notes to explain this remote does this. To watch the TV, you turn on this remote and you press this button, and then you turn on that remote and you press that button, and then here's the third remote that you use to control. That's how you get to Netflix. Oh, you want to watch TV, the basketball game? And I know it's confusing. But it isn't my fault, and it's not your fault, and it's not Burke, who's staying in our house's fault. It's the designers of these systems' fault. They don't. Now, a number of people in the chat room just said, "One, I got one remote, 20 in the cabinet." Yeah, that's one solution, right? And there are universal remotes out there. I have yet to find one that can really solve my complicated TV setup. The Logitech Harmony, right? And then there's a Harmony Hub, and I've bought them all over time, Logitech One. Burke, you're going to be able to figure this out because we put post-it notes and I have a printed manual. Yes, this is it. Burke has just brought me the picture because I think maybe you don't believe me when I say we've got the remotes and we've got post-it notes on all, just to explain. But, you know, I told Lisa, my wife.
One of them was wrong.
Burke says one of them was wrong. I told her that Burke doesn't need this.
No.
You can figure this out. It didn't hurt, he says. You've noticed, though, haven't you, that there are some people, I don't know if it's genetic or what, that just, they can look at it. I'm one of those people. I can sit down at any AV system and go, oh, yeah, you do this, this, and this. I can figure it out. I bet you're like that.
Eventually.
Yeah. And then there are people who look at it and go, I don't know what to do here. The problem is the people who design software, the people who design computers, the people who design remote controls are of the first kind. They're the kind of people who could sit down, look at something, go, oh, I know how this works. And they don't understand that most other people have no idea. They'll look. You ask an engineer, why did you design this website like that? I can't figure out. He said, well, that's obvious. Didn't you see the button? And you. There's a big debate in design circles about something they call the hamburger menu. Now, I look at that and I know what to do. You've seen it. Many web pages, now software is doing it. A lot of mobile software is doing it. It's three lines. They call it a hamburger because it's like a bun, a patty, and a bun. Three lines. Have you seen that? What do you think of when you see that? Do you think of a hamburger? Do you know what to do when you see that? When we designed our website, the designer said, you can't use the hamburger menu. I said, what? He said, no one understands what those three lines are. I said, it's a menu. You hit it, and it's a menu. Well, you know that, but no one else knows that. And by the way, almost everywhere now, that's what you see is a hamburger menu. I guess eventually we'll learn. It's one of the things I kind of laugh when people say, oh, the iPhone, it's so easy to use. It is not easy to use. The iPhone is really hard to use because every application has a different user interface, right? There's Apple, when they designed the Macintosh, they actually wrote, there were 4 or 5 giant volumes. There was a whole thing on user interface guidelines. There was one way to do it, and they were very clear. This is how you do it. And software on the Mac, on the original Mac, was very easy to use because everybody did it the same way. For some reason, they neglected to do that for the iPhone. And every app has a different way to do things. In fact, in some cases, now you tell me if you're an iPhone user. In some cases, you're on a screen, you'd think, oh, is there an arrow in the upper left-hand corner? How do I get back? How do I go to the previous screen? And in many cases, there is no way. You just sit there, and I guess what you're supposed to do is press the home button and start over. That is not good design. Anyway, my motto, apparently stolen from Walt Mossberg, his motto for many years, mine as well, it is not your fault. And that's really, if there were one kind of underlying philosophy to this show, is It's not a case of, I know how to use this, you don't. Let me teach you at all. At all. I do have that gene where I can, you know, look at this stuff and figure it out most of the time. You know, I'm one of those people. But that doesn't mean I'm, you know, in any way better. Really, the message is none of this stuff is well designed. Even I am baffled often by the user interface on hardware and software. And we're just going to have to stick together and figure it out together. And that's what we do on this show. We figure it out together. So I'm so glad you're here. I didn't mean to go on and on. It was my Sunday sermon. But I will stop now. And we will take some calls. And I'm just glad you're here. We're going to figure this out together. And it's not your fault. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Glad you're here on this Sunday. Let's go to the phones. Let's take some calls, shall we? That's what I like doing the most. Carlos is on the line from Jersey City, New Jersey. Hello, Carlos.
Hello, Leo Laporte.
Welcome to the show.
Welcome. I've been listening for you for years.
And, thank you.
I listen to you through the podcast because, you know, I can't listen to you around this time. My party is a little pissed off right now because I'm supposed to have dinner, but right now...
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, let's answer quickly. I don't want you to miss dinner.
Well, this happened on Thursday. I don't know exactly what happened to my... I have a Mac.
Yeah.
It's old, probably about 9 years old.
Okay.
And the latest version I have in there is the Lion.
Okay.
It's 10.75,
yeah.
I think
yeah.
it is.
Yeah.
And I was using Safari. It says I need to upgrade because this and that.
Yeah, they're starting to say, oh, we're gonna phase you guys, you old guys out. We're not gonna.
Yeah. You know, and I was start using Google Chrome, which worked only for like maybe 3 months, and then after that, Google started doing the same. And I went, well, listen, Oprah, I works smoothly in my iPad and my iPhone. Why can I do that? And I wake up the morning. It was 10 o'clock. I back up the computer. So I don't back it up for 4 weeks. Maybe it's time. Plug in the external drive, back it up through Time Machine. And after that, I start searching in the web to see what version of Opera browser I could use. And between that time and when an hour went by, it suddenly I hear this flashing in my computer, and it says your computer is being hacked. And it says,
"Oh no! That's just scareware."
Ah, that's what it is.
Yeah, and that's some website that you went to has popped something up.
You the best. I tried yesterday to get in and I couldn't do it.
Oh, I'm so glad you got in. Yeah, you don't have, you know, this is a big, it's an epidemic, Windows and Mac. Mac people sometimes say, oh, we don't have to worry about that. Oh, no, it's everywhere. Did it say, just out of curiosity, did it say this is Microsoft?
No, it's a coldest number, and suddenly this pop-up where you try to shut down your computer.
Yeah, it won't let you shut it down. Yeah,
I'll control delete to try to reboot and force the browser to quit. It didn't. So the only thing I did is press the off button and just went off. But I've been listening and watching all the other episodes you have and other people.
I scared you.
Maybe.
I scared
yes.
you. So you haven't turned it back on?
No.
No. I think you're all right. I think what usually happens with these is it's a pop-up that comes from a website. It has not necessarily modified your Mac. But it is reason for concern because Apple's no longer supporting Lion. They're no longer supporting Safari for Lion. Chrome isn't doing it. And so what's going to happen is increasingly you're going to be using older software that isn't as well supported. Macintosh is much more secure today than it was 9 years ago. On the other hand, you're probably okay. You're probably okay. That's just a pop-up.
Do you suggest to log in? I will shut down my Wi-Fi at home and completely erase.
No. You don't have to go that far. If you really want to be safe, do disconnect from the internet. just to make sure, turn on the computer again. The pop-up won't be gone, by the way, because it probably installed a little extension in your browser.
But that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to remove the browser's program and install it.
But the chances are it's not really a virus. It's easy to put a little what they call a BHO, a browser hijacker object, on there, that every time you run the browser, it pops this up. Look in your browser extensions. Was it Safari or Chrome that this happened to?
I don't know what version it was on the Lion. That's the latest version.
But were you using Safari or were you
just looking after that? I was seeing Opera will work better, which it did. I was just
Opera's fun. So it was Opera that this happened to?
No, it happened in Google Chrome.
You go into Chrome and you just delete all the extensions, just in case. The chances of you having an actual infection are very low.
Oh. Do you suggest, turn off my Wi-Fi at home before I do all that?
Just if you really wanted to be safe. Yeah, the bad guys, if there is something bad on there, it won't be able to connect to the outside world if you turn off your internet. So just, wait till after dinner. Wait till everybody goes to bed. Okay. Turn off the internet. Turn it on again. You might get that pop-up again. It's just somewhere. It's a plug-in or an extension.
But I couldn't shut down my computer.
Yeah, that's because it's possible with JavaScript to really lock up your system, but it's not an infection. I don't know if your current version of Chrome will support. There are very good extensions to protect you. The one I recommend is something called uBlock, the letter U, block, Origin. It's nominally an ad blocker, but it also blocks JavaScript exploits like this. This is JavaScript. So if you put uBlock Origin on there, you won't get these pop-ups anymore.
All right. Can you just put it? I mean, I'll be able to go back and actually listen to this so I can go back.
It'll be in the show notes. It'll be in the show notes. Yeah.
Yes, please.
Hey,
all right, Leo.
I think you're going to be okay. You were right. I understand your concern, Carlos. I mean, it's reasonable. But A, you're on a Mac. So, you're a much smaller universe of people on a Mac, so most attackers don't even bother with Macs. And it's so easy to do what's a drive-by pop-up like that, and they're everywhere now, and it isn't an issue. If you can get Chrome working again, put uBlock Origin on there, and you'll never see that again.
All right. Can I ask you a last question?
Sure.
I was actually planning to get a new computer. I've been looking at the Google.
Get a Chromebook. Yes. Yes.
But I need to learn. They don't have a Microsoft Word and professional.
No, they have Google Docs. It depends on what you need. If if you're writing books and your publisher says, no, they have to be in Microsoft Office format, well, that might not be a good choice. But if you're just writing for yourself, Google Docs is fine. And if this had happened to you on Chromebook, I would just say,
MacBook and the Chrome browser, yes.
Yeah, but it happened to you on a Chromebook, if you buy a Chromebook, $200 or $300, and this happened to you, I just say, go in the settings, do the power wash, and it'll all be gone, and nothing will be, it'd be easy.
Okay.
So I do really like Chromebooks. And if most of what you do is done in a browser, it's up to date, it's automatically protected, and it's easy to fix if you do get some minor little bug like this.
I went to the store and looked at them, and he wants to get me back to Windows.
No, don't listen to that guy. He wants to sell you something. Get a Chromebook. Don't listen to your partner. He's not your friend. if you can afford it, get a Chromebook from Samsung. Get the Chromebook Plus or the Chromebook Pro. Beautiful. And you'll never have another problem. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So just so you know, we're pre-recording, so the show notes aren't going to reflect your answer, Carlos, until June 11th. June 11th, you can go back to the website. But, I feel bad.
You are the best, Leo. I've been listening to you for years, and I have learned so much.
Oh, you're
so
great.
From you. And
I think, do you need a Mac or do you need Windows? Why does your partner want you to get Windows?
Well, he has a Surface Pro 3, and I cannot afford right now.
Don't get a $200 Chromebook. Yeah, just get a Chromebook.
I can actually go up to 500.
Then get the Samsung. You will thank me. Get the Samsung Chromebook Plus.
Let me make a note.
You will thank me. You will love this thing. It's got a stylus. It's got a touch screen. You could fold it over. You can annotate.
I like that very much.
What kind of word processing? I mean, are you just writing notes for yourself? Or you?
It's just because I need to get a better job, and some of the jobs that require for me to know a Microsoft Word. And
you can learn that. You can learn. Keep your Mac, and you could put Word on there. But seriously, a Samsung.
I do have like the I do have that version.
Yeah.
You switch to other programs, but and not in this Mac. I cannot do the updates anymore.
You know, if you want to learn Word, you can still do it on a Chromebook. Microsoft offers a free Word website, office.com. You can use the web version of Word. It's very much like the same desktop. If you were looking for a job, you would say, I know Word. And it's awesome. And it's free, and it runs on a Chromebook. It runs on a Chromebook.
And it's way cheaper than Microsoft. I don't want Microsoft. I don't like
it. No. Get a Chromebook.
It's so hard to look at, read all the pages, and I want something beautiful.
If you can spend $500, then definitely get the Samsung Chromebook Plus. They have a Pro coming out in the next week, but I think the Chromebook Plus is fine. It's 2 pounds. It's light. My daughter uses it in college. It folds over. It's beautiful, and you never have to worry about any of this crap again.
You know, Leo, I'm going to do it.
Good.
Whether he likes it or not, I'm just going to go for it.
Tell him Leo said it's okay. Carlos, thank you.
Thank you, Leo, so much.
Have a wonderful day. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Back to the phones we go. You've been very patient. Gloria, North Hollywood, California. Thanks for hanging on.
Hi, Leo.
Hi, Gloria. What can I do for you?
I don't feel so nervous now that you're off the air.
Yes. No one's listening. It's just you and me.
That's right.
No one knows that we're even talking. This is our little secret, Gloria.
Good. I have Windows 7. I've heard you say many times, don't buy the virus protection programs. Just use Windows Defender.
Yeah, and actually on Windows 7, I think you still have to download it. It's called Security Essentials.
See, now that's where the confusion is. I tried to turn on Windows Defender, and I got an error code. So I took the error code number and went to the internet. It said Windows Essentials versus Windows Defender. So I have
all Microsoft. So Microsoft bought a kind of junky, I'll be honest, antivirus company some years ago. They didn't want to put the other antivirus guys out of business. So they, in an extremely gradual fashion, slowly added the capabilities to Windows. It wasn't until the latest version, Windows 10, that it came with Windows. In years previous, versions previous, you had to go to Microsoft.com/security_essentials and download it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the same as Defender. They just renamed it in Windows 10.
So I don't need...
In Windows 7, Defender was an anti-spyware program. It's very confusing. In my opinion, I don't think you need anything but Windows Security Essentials. Just download that. It's free. And you're fine. Remember, though, this doesn't let you off the hook. No antivirus does for being smart. And we've already talked about this. You know, you update all the time, right? You got to keep it up to date. You update your browser. You update anything that goes online, like your Adobe Reader or Shockwave or Flash. You make sure that's all kept up to date. You always download those updates, not from just any old place, but from the manufacturer.
Mm-hmm.
You don't take software from strangers. You get a pop-up that says download this. You really think twice. Make sure you really need it. In fact, better yet, if it says your flash is out of date, don't just say okay, download it. Open your browser and say get flash, and then go to adobe.com and get it. That way you know you're getting real flash. You know, bad guys, they'll try all sorts of tricks to get stuff on your system, including saying, oh, your flash is out of date, but we've got a copy here, download this. But it's not Flash.
So forget about Windows Defender, since I already have Windows Essentials on.
Yeah, Defender in Windows 7 days was anti-spyware, and it's included with Essentials.
Okay, so I have Malwarebytes and...
Don't need that. I would take that off.
both of them.
Yeah, you first of all, you don't want multiple security programs on there. Yeah. They war with one another.
Right.
And I don't, in my opinion, and I know I'm not, I am backed by most security professionals. In fact, all of the ones I know. But you'll still read articles. I just read an article in the New York Times a few weeks ago that said, you need an antivirus. I completely disagree. And I'll tell you why. First of all, you got an antivirus. It's good enough. Maybe you could get a better one. It's very hard to tell what antiviruses are better because the only way they're rated is with these test suites. And, of course, if you're an antivirus company, you get the test suite and you make sure your antivirus works with it. So that's not a good test. Also, an antivirus can't block everything. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to do anything. So they're going to assume some intelligence on your part. And if you say, no, I want to install Flash from this bogus site, they're not going to stop you. Mm-hmm. Maybe after you install it, they'll say, oh, that was not a good idea. But maybe not. So the antivirus gives you a false sense of security. It doesn't stop the most dangerous stuff, the stuff that's brand new. And here's the worst part. Many antivirus programs, just like any software on your computer, can open holes in your computer. They can be themselves a vector for attack. Mm-hmm. And this has happened with some of the biggest names in antivirus software. I won't name the names, but you can guess. They've actually made your system more vulnerable. Plus, there's antiviruses. This happened about a month ago. Big name antivirus decided that Windows was malware, uninstalled pieces of the operating system, and broke people's computers. This is not a useful tool. It gets in your way. It can open holes in your computer. It gives you a false sense of security. And it doesn't work 100% of the time. And most, it might work about a quarter of the time.
Okay.
So
take off Malwarebytes and SpyBot.
Yep.
Just take them off.
Yep.
And only use Windows Essentials, Security
yep.
Essentials.
And then you need to be a good person and keep your system up to date.
Update.
Be very careful about where you get software. In fact, in general, always type in the address yourself. Don't click links in emails and messages. Type in the address yourself. If you get an email from your bank that says, oh, bad news, it looks like your account's been breached. Quick, click this link and log in. Don't do that.
But if you get little icons, well, you know what the Windows update signal, the little shield, you know that that's...
That's okay.
Yeah.
But make sure it's going to Windows Update
okay.
And not Hacker Update.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm saying?
I have one little small thing. I have a very old computer. It's an XP. Java keeps popping up with...
Get rid of that thing.
Oh, get rid of Java or get rid of...
XP, because you know why? Microsoft's not keeping that up to date.
Oh, because it keeps coming back. Even though I install new Java updates, it keeps coming back. The pop-up keeps saying updates available. I'll install it.
Oh, that's because it's XP. So most companies, and I bet you Oracle's one of them, they make Java, have stopped supporting XP. For instance, you can't get a newer version of Chrome. You can't get a version of Internet Explorer later than 8. Mm-hmm. You can't get a new version of Firefox. Because they've, just like Microsoft, they've all stopped supporting XP. Your XP machine's fine, just don't put it online.
Online, right, on the internet, right. Okay. So get rid of Java or just leave it and just ignore the update notice?
It won't give you a notice, I think, if you're not online.
Mm-hmm.
It's got the latest, it's almost certainly got the latest version it can use.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So the current version's 8. It probably has something like 5 or 4 or 6 on it. And it says, well, that's not the latest version. But then it downloads the updater or the updater runs and goes, oh, never mind.
Yeah, now that I think of it, it does say you need a newer version.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll just ignore it.
Just ignore it. That's annoying.
Uninstall Java. Just leave it like it is.
Well, I would, if you're not using Java, you don't know you need it, get rid of it.
I wouldn't know what it's for.
Yeah, well, it's another, by the way. Neither Microsoft nor Apple ships their operating system with Java anymore. It's another massive security problem.
Okay. So uninstall it.
Uninstall it. And you'll know if you need it, then it's, you know, the only time you ever really need it, some older websites, but it's mostly things like if you play checkers online or solitaire online. Not even solitaire on your computer, but like on a website. Mm-hmm. Old sites, really old sites, may use Java to do that.
Okay.
Most of the time, you don't need Java. Oh. And if you do, put the other thing you can do is everybody, some people do need Java for various reasons. Go in the Java settings and disable the browser plugin.
Okay.
That's what's dangerous, because what happens is somebody writes a malicious bit of code, puts it on a website, your browser goes to the website, and it's dopey. It says, oh, I need to run Java. And it runs Java, and the code gets on your machine and it puts bad stuff on there.
Okay.
So as long as you say, don't run the Java plugin anymore, the browser will say, I don't know what to do with this, and you'll be safe.
Okay.
I don't know what to do with this is always better than, oh, I know what to do with this.
Yes.
I know exactly what to do with this. That's a bad thing.
Okay.
Sometimes a dumb computer is better than a half-smart one.
Yes. I can listen to you next week then, right?
You can, and I hope you do, and this answer will be on June 11th.
Okay.
We're recording ahead of time because I'm going on vacation, so everything I just told you will be back on June 11th.
Okay, great.
Hey, it was great to talk to you, Glenn and Gloria. Thank you.
Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. Java does not equal JavaScript. That's confusing, I know. JavaScript is something that was written by Mozilla. Originally, I think they called it ActionScript, and then somebody had a bright idea. You know, Java's really hot. We should call it JavaScript. Not related and not the same thing, and you do need JavaScript on your system. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. We'll be back to the Tech Guy show in just a moment, but first a word from Capterra. Capterra's support helps bring this podcast to you, and there's a great reason they're on this show, because all the time I get calls from people saying, you know, my company's asked me to find... You know what, accounting software or medical office management software or contractor software, you know, and I need help. What do you suggest, Leo? And I don't know, but now I have a place I can send you besides just Googling it. That's no good, right? You Google medical office management software, and you're going to find just whatever Google comes up with without a whole lot of information and no way to compare your results. Capterra is free, it's easy, and it does the job for you. CAPTERRA.com. 400 different categories of software to choose from. App development, business continuity, content marketing, file sharing, human resource. Anything the boss might say, Smithers, find me a great web analytics company. What's the best software for that? Their directory includes, not in 400 categories, 30,000 different software solutions. And you're going to love this. Go to the site, enter in what you're looking for. You can drill down. You can narrow it down. You could say, you know, example of medical office management. I also want to be able to manage patient schedules and insurance and prescriptions or whatever. You check the boxes. They narrow it down for you because they know exactly what each software can do. You can then check boxes, say, I want to compare this. Let's see, that one looks good and that one. And then they'll give you a chart, comparison chart. But here's the most important thing. Verified user reviews and ratings from users just like you, users who are using the programs, the software. They're verified. So you're going to know from a peer, from somebody like you, exactly how it's working for them. You'll also find more information like articles and reports and buying guides that'll help you do your software search. This is it, the one site you need to find the software for your business. That's why so many small and large businesses turn to Capterra to find the right software solution. Don't waste time sorting through search results. Find your software solution with Capterra and get back to business. And your boss is going to pat you on the back. If you're the boss, pat yourself on the back. Whether you need help with website building or customer service or project management, it's all there. 400 categories. Capterra.com. And by the way, did I say it's free? They don't charge. There's no obligation. There's no registration. Just go and use it. It's a free resource that helps you make the right software choice. Do what you do better and join the millions who use Capterra every month to find software solutions for their business. Visit capterra.com/techguy and start your free software search today. CAPTERRA, capterra.com/techguy. And we thank them so much for their support of the Tech Guy podcast. Now back to the show. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Let's get back to the phone. Sarah, so patient, listening in Studio City. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. I can't believe after all these years of listening, I'm actually calling.
You have a problem finally?
Well, no, I've had problems. But I've been on the computer since 83 and DOS.
Wow.
I'm 68. So I couldn't afford a Mac back then in advertising and graphic design. I had to go on a PC.
Oh, man. I'm sure you wanted one in graphic design. That was all the thing, the rage. Yeah.
It was $10,000 for a basic.
I know. It was crazy. I remember buying my first Mac. I had to charge it with my Macy's charge card and pay it off over 3 years.
That's what I should have done.
Well, I kind of had to do that. It was my business.
Instead of Ventura Publisher, try designing.
Oh, man, Ventura Publisher. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Well, here's my situation.
Yes.
I'm a professional artist. I'm going to Italy for an exhibition of some of my paintings.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
What's your medium? What are you painting? Acrylics or oil?
I paint acrylic.
Yes. Nice.
And right now I do Native American, Northern Plains Indians that have adopted me into their family.
Oh, how cool. I bet the Italians will just go crazy over that.
Well, I'm working on a dress right now. The 16 days of the exhibition, I'm going to dress in Native regalia.
Oh, my goodness.
To get them to come in and look at my work.
What city?
Pardon? I'm going to be in Florence.
What higher praise could there be for an artist than to exhibit in Florence?
Isn't that fantastic?
The greatest art city in the world. Wow. Well, congratulations. That's nice.
Thank you.
You made it. Yeah.
Here's what I heard last week that disturbed me.
Uh-oh.
That coming back into the country, we may not be able to bring our laptop.
Yeah, we don't know that yet. I'm leaving the country too, and I'm a little nervous. Apparently the administration is considering but hasn't approved a rule that will prohibit the use of laptops on some airplanes coming into the U.S. They've already done it with, eight Middle Eastern airlines. Not American, just Middle Eastern airlines coming from the Middle East. I don't think they'll approve this rule because it would be economic suicide.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I was panicked. Okay.
Well, I don't blame you, but it's not a rule yet. And it could be, though. You could be in Venice or Florence, and then they make it a rule, in which case you have to check your laptop and your bags.
Okay. Well, here's what I was thinking, and tell me if I'm going the wrong or right direction. I work on my computer when I'm out at an exhibition, so
you got to bring it.
Well, I was thinking if I had something like a notebook, could I still transfer, and all of it being Mac-oriented, so they all share files and folders, could I work on a notebook?
Well, understand, I think, first of all, you will be able to bring it back in. It's
okay.
Just that you can't bring it in the cabin.
Okay.
You would have to check it in your checked luggage. That's the rule they're considering, and as of the time we're talking right now, they haven't made it a rule yet.
Personally, I work on the inventory of my Excel.
Yep.
And I work on my.
No, you can bring your bring your computer. You just check it.
If I want to work in the plane.
Nah, that's when you're out of luck.
If I had a notebook, would I be?
No, a phone only. If they pass this rule, which they haven't done.
Oh.
And the reason is, we now know, because President Trump told the Russians in his meeting with them that, and that's sad because this was a highly classified intelligence. Apparently, the Israeli intelligence agency had intelligence that there would be an attempt to sneak a bomb onto an airplane by putting it in a laptop.
Great, just like our shoes.
Yeah, that's why you can't wear shoes, because some nutcase tried to light his shoes on fire 10 years ago. So remember, we used to have to turn our laptops on, our electronics on. I don't know why they're not doing that. I bet you it'll end up being something like that, because the problem with doing this is it costs the airlines a lot of money, because business travelers fully expect to be able to use their laptops during the long cross-Atlantic flight.
Right. That's what I expect to do. I am a professional at my work.
Yeah. Of course. And business travelers, by the way, happen to be the most lucrative for the airlines. So, you know, the airlines are making a lot of behind the scenes calls saying, I don't think you really want to do that. On the other hand, I understand we got to protect ourselves. We don't want a plane to blow up over the Atlantic either. So, My suspicion is we'll go back to, and I don't know why we stopped doing it, the old regime of, okay, you've got a laptop, you can bring it on the plane, but you're going to have to turn it on for me.
Okay.
And well, show me that it boots up, because if it's a bomb, it won't turn on.
All right.
But in any case, what you could do, you will be able to bring a phone on. You can. Microsoft Excel runs quite well, actually, on iOS.
No, but that's too tiny to look.
Oh, I know. It's a little small. Bring a magnifying glass.
No, my fingers are bigger than that.
Yeah.
Okay. The other question I have recorded my work back to the early 70s. But you know, digitally, there was nothing back then. I have everything on slides.
Yeah, that's what my mom did. She took high-quality slides
right,
of her
I
art.
I have professionally photographed on slides.
And then you can have it professionally scanned.
Well, here's the question. I bought a scanner, but the quality was so poor. I returned it this day.
Yeah.
And if I have, say, for instance, I have 200 slides, and they're $3 a piece, would it be more cost-efficient to buy the quality scanner?
They make slide scanners. And that's probably what you want, is a scanner that's specifically for slides. Now, there are some inexpensive models. Epson makes some inexpensive models. The reason it's different for a slide is when you scan something, normally you bounce light off of it, and the camera is at the same side of the scanner as the light. You bounce light off, the camera takes a picture. With a slide, you have to pass light through it. So the light's on one side, the camera's on the other side. And so that's a different kind of architecture. But Epson does make... they used to call them the Perfection slide scanners, and they come with a special holder for slides, and I think it does a very good job. That's lots less than $600. A professional slide scanner made by companies like Nikon, thousands of dollars.
Oh, so that's why they charge $3 a piece.
Yeah, they got to pay for it. So, they would do a better job. They may also offer cleanup services. You know, sometimes they clean the slide, get all the dust and specs off of it, maybe even clean it up with Photoshop afterwards. So 600 slides, that's a lot of work.
Oh, no, I don't even know how many I have.
Yeah.
I just grabbed a number out of the universe.
Yeah. It can be pricey, but remember, your time costs something and the equipment costs something.
Exactly.
And slides, if it were just prints, I'd say do it yourself, but slides are a little trickier to do right. But you can look at the Epson. I've used the Epson Perfection with slides, and it works quite well, and it's well under $600.
Okay, my last question.
Yes.
I have tried for years to get into the chat room, and I have no idea how to do
it. Any browser, just go to IRC. You can even do it on an iPad. irc.twit.tv. It's a web address that gives you it's a web front end to our IRC chat room. If you want to get fancy down the road, we have explanations at the website on how to run special IRC software. We'd love to have you in the chat room. You will get a default name if you use the web browser, so make sure you change your nickname to something you like, you know, famous Florentian painter or something like that, and I will see you in the chat room, Teresa. We love having you in there. More information if you go to the website, irc.twit.tv. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Back to the phones we go. And let's see who's next here. Bob in Vista, California. Hi, Bob.
How are we doing, Leo?
I'm well. Thanks for hanging on, sir.
I've got a problem with a ghost email. What happens is email a buddy of mine, and I get back a mail not sent notice, another name. And I think what happened was a year or so ago, my buddy had forwarded an email to me, and it came from this guy that it keeps bouncing back.
Oh, that's weird. So when you create the new email, do you use reply, or do you start with a fresh email and type his name in?
This is a fresh email. And I'm copying and pasting what it is. It's a newsletter I sent out, and he's included. But every time from his particular email, because I've emailed him.
So the email is sent out to a bunch of different people.
Well.
Is that right?
That's what I'm doing once a month. But from his, I bounce back this other name that's not on the list.
I understand what you're saying. But Even if you just sent a single email to this friend, would you get that? Or only when you send it out to the list?
No. Just from his email. And I've deleted the email and retyped it in, and it still comes up.
So
I've gone into it. I'm on the Mac.
Yeah, I apologize, but let me ask this one more time. If you start and create a new email message and you type in your friend's name, you're not loading a list or anything like that. As you're typing, does it auto-complete?
Yes.
Okay. And then you see his name and you hit return.
Correct.
And then you send it, and for some reason you get a bounce back from a second address. It still goes through to your friend, though, right?
Yes.
But this second address is somehow magically getting in there.
Correct. And I've eliminated him from the previous addresses list and email.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. This is only on one particular computer. Have you tried it on any other computer? Like if you used a friend's computer or maybe went to the library, used it? That's what I would do. And only because there's two possibilities. One is that your email program is doing something. The other would be that his email system is doing something. We want to figure out which system is adding that second address. It could be his, in which case the same thing would happen no matter where you sent this email from. You could use a friend's computer, the library computer, and if you got the same effect, you got a bounce back from a ghost address, then it wouldn't be anything you could do anything about at all. It would be have something to do with your buddy's email system.
Okay.
In other words, it could be configured to, he could have done this automatically when he got email from you, send it to the buddy. And there's nothing you could do about that. So that's the experiment to do.
I'm going to try it from my phone.
On the other hand, if you do it from the phone, you don't get the bounce back, then we know it's not your buddy's emailer that's the problem. It's your email program on your computer. And I think it's probably that, I don't know. I mean, there's certainly ways you could set it up that when you send an email to somebody, it would also CC, which is a funny word to use in this context, because it comes from, remember, carbon copy.
Yeah.
And not only are we not using a typewriter, we're not using carbon paper either, but that's a CC. It could be, for instance, you can set up an email program to automatically CC a name every time you send out an email. That's a setting in many email programs. So it is possible that that's something about the configuration of your email. But first do it on your phone just to see.
Yeah. Okay. I've sent it out, and mail administrator, mail system error, return mail.
Fine. Good. That's good news. You know why? Because it's not your fault.
Yeah.
What it means is that your friend, whose email you are using, has in some way set up his email that it will bounce. He may have forgotten he's even done this. He said, I love Bob's newsletter so much. Our friend Joe would love this. Let me just set up a filter on my system that whenever Bob sends me his newsletter, Joe gets a copy. Something like that.
Well, this is the thing. The guy that the email keeps bouncing from, he's quit this.
I understand. And apparently his email doesn't work anymore anyway.
That's right.
Yeah. You might have passed away for all we know. But if it does this as it just did in different email programs on different computers, it's not you. And unfortunately, there's not much you can do about it except tell your friend.
Yeah, well, I talked to him about it. He's completely non-computer,
That's why. He is set up something. And he doesn't remember, or he doesn't even know that he did it. And you're just going to have to live with it. Now, you can fight fire with fire because you can write in your email program a little thing that drops any email that says the administrator says this doesn't exist. You can just have that go away, and you'll never see it. That's the kind of thing filters can do.
Yeah.
They're telling me now that in modern parlance, CC means courtesy copy. That's not true. It means carbon copy. And it always...
Yeah. I know it.
And you can't rename it just because there's no such thing as a typewriter and a carbon copy anymore.
I tell my wife when she sends things out to her little groups, I said, no, put them in put them in BC, blind copy, so that everybody doesn't see everybody else.
Oh, I was going to say that, Bob. That's so good that you know that.
Yeah, because that's what I do with my newsletter.
Use BCC, blind carbon copy. And the reason is, otherwise, you're giving everybody on the list everybody else's email address.
Yeah, yeah.
If you use BCC, they only see their email address.
I love that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
Well, we solved that mystery.
I've had a way of trying to get this out. Now I got to go talk to Phil.
Yeah, I don't know what Phil's done.
See what he's doing on his computer.
Yeah, there's something weird going on with Phil. I don't know what he set up. He probably doesn't either.
Yep.
I feel like it's the Hardy Boys, the case of the ghost email. We've solved another one.
Yeah.
Thanks, Bob.
Have a great trip.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Take care. Moving on, we're going to go to, I got to go to this one. Alan, he's in La Porte, Colorado. Hello, Alan.
Hello, Leo.
I want more calls from La Porte.
In La Porte, on the banks of the beautiful Cashalapuda River.
I think that La Porte is probably the best known, although my dad tells me that most every state has a La Porte. But apparently, we were very profligate. And my ancestors got around. And at one point, my dad, I believe, went to visit everyone.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's quite a trip,
isn't
it?
He didn't leave his name with me.
No, he should have stopped by. I think briefly, there's a La Porte, California, and I think we briefly tried to take it over, but it was a failed coup. So I'm just going to have to live with that.
Second time caller, full time listener.
Welcome. So nice to have you. Thanks, Alan.
All your podcasts.
Thanks for hanging on, too.
Yes, no problem. So I'm a horse vet here in La Porte, and I still have a pager.
Oh, my. I'm surprised you can get service.
So I want to figure out a way that I can integrate it, my paging number, with my Ring Central that I use for my business, a former advertiser with you, along with Epson.
Yeah, we love Ring Central.
Else that I use.
Yeah, we still use Ring Central here. So that's a puzzle because pagers. You got to talk to the company that you get the service from, because
what I'd like to do is drop the service.
Yeah, but you'd like to keep the phone number. So what you want to do?
It doesn't matter because it's forwarded from my Ring Central.
Oh, I get it.
Tell them to do that. You know, press 2 at this time, and it forwards it to the phone number.
So you just change that outbound message.
I'd like to just drop the pager altogether, but I'd like to have it so that it comes into my Android phone, the Samsung Note 5, with a distinct ringtone or something, so I know that it's not just a message I'm getting from other clients that just want to call, you know, want to make an appointment.
Okay, I'm going to have to put you on hold for just a second as I'm running out of time, and I'm a little puzzled.
Okay.
This sounds like a complicated call. I'm a little puzzled.
That's why I called it.
So hang on in La Porte, Colorado, and I'll be right back to you, Alan. But we got to take a break. Leo La Porte, the tech guy. More calls still to come. Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, is just around the corner, too. All right. Yeah, I did run out of time on that one. Describe once again. So you want to keep the number, and you want to keep.
It doesn't matter if I keep the number.
You don't keep the number. You just want somebody to be able to press.
Whenever somebody calls into my office number and they have an emergency, they press 2 at this time for equine emergency.
And you want a special ringtone up, to come over your Android.
Something.
Yeah.
Something, because I have the, you know, I wanted to, maybe I need a Google Voice with a separate line number there.
Does it appear on the Android phone to be coming from that number? No, it doesn't. It comes from your number. What is the caller ID when they press 2? It's your caller ID.
When it does page me, it texts me and it emails me.
Yeah. So what will happen is Ring Central will forward that call. And what does Ring Central do? What kind of information?
To a number, to my paging company.
Yeah. And
in turn page me.
I understand. So you don't know what the caller ID looks like. That would be the question. Because what you need is something unique that your phone would see and then do a unique ringtone. So
right.
I bet you could have Ring Central have it come from any arbitrary number, even 1234. And then you'd set the Android phone to have a different ringtone for that particular number. So the question is actually one for Ring Central. You need to go to Ring Central and say, look, I want, when they press 2, I want it to call my number from this unique caller ID.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. I've got like 3 or 4 different numbers with Ring Central.
Yeah.
My original.
Use one of them.
Number.
Yeah, use one of them.
Use one of those.
Yeah.
Okay.
Say it's coming from this number, and then all you have, that's easy. Then in the Android phone, you just say this number has a unique ringtone.
Ah, very good. Very
clever!
Good.
I'm a clever fellow, aren't I?
Yes, you are.
Well, nice to talk to you. Thank you.
You bet.
Take care, Alan. All right.
Yep.
Bye-bye. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, I think we have some phone calls. Shall I answer some more calls? Why not? Barry's been very patient, hanging on the line in San Diego. Hi, Barry.
Hi. Welcome. Hi, Leo.
Hi.
I'm actually in San Dimas.
Ah. Okay.
And you remember Dr. Krause? He was my physician also.
Yes.
I have a funny story to tell you about him. But my question is, I have the iPhone 6 Plus.
Very nice
and
phone. It has a headphone jack.
Yeah, I like it.
How original.
And it's got the 9-point-something-or-other iOS.
Yeah.
It keeps wanting me to update.
You should update, yeah.
I should update.
Absolutely.
Okay. Because online it says, if you got the 9, don't do that.
Oh, don't listen to those naysayers. There's always a risk. And, you know, when you have 80 million phones out there, there's going to be, you know, 1/1,000th. Of 1% that will have problems. There's always a risk with an operating system upgrade. But the problem is with 80 million phones, 1/1,000th of 1%, that's hundreds or maybe even thousands of people. That's enough people to make everybody go, oh, I better not do that. But no, I'll tell you why you want to do it. Between the version you have and the current version, there are many, 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 many security flaws that have been fixed. And as soon as any company, this is why you always want to do critical patches. As soon as any company puts out a fix for a security flaw, that's a signal to the bad guys. They go, oh, let's see what that is. Because they know most people, many people don't update. Actually, iOS is a little different. About 80% of iOS users update, iPhone owners update. But still, that means 1 in 5 won't update and we can get to them. All we have to do is figure out what Apple fixed. So it's a good idea. You know, the race has started as soon as they release that update, and so it's a good idea. And by the way, there's some big improvements. Do the people say don't upgrade because of issues?
Yeah, there was issues, and they said if you got the 9-point-something, stay with it. If you've already updated to the 10-point-something, then go ahead and update to the newest 10-point.
Yeah, you should update. First of all, any issues? First of all, you have a very recent iPhone. I mean, it's not. It's only last, you know, it's only, what, a right. year? It's the previous phone before the 7. So it's not like, it's. If you had an iPhone 4, I might say, yeah. In fact, I don't think Apple would let you update. But a 6 Plus, or a 6S rather, that's fine. That's fine. And you'll see some big improvements. You will see some UI changes from 9. iOS 10 has some, but, you know, there's, for the most part, I think those are beneficial. And it's been out for a while now. So any.
That's why I called. And
yeah.
Before I update, I was calling you first.
Yeah. I mean, any problems that cropped up, and that, you know, there are always a few, have been fixed by now.
Okay.
It's very stable.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, when we get off the phone, I will update it immediately.
Good man. Yeah. I mean, Apple just started talking about iOS 11 this week. So. You're going to have to update again in a few months. No, it's absolutely worth it. For a late model iPhone like yours, I would strongly suggest it. You won't have any problems. And if you do, don't call me back. I don't want to know that. No, you shouldn't. And even if you did, you can reset the phone and do it again. Anytime you're installing a new operating system, some things can go wrong and cause problems. Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
I have to tell you a quick story about Dr. Krause if you got the time.
Sure.
Okay. I went in there and to get my throat looked at. I had a sore throat. And he's a very good physician. He was a very good physician. lots of patients in the waiting room. It was a five-minute look at my throat, and then we spent 45 or 50 minutes talking about you and your show. I don't know what those people, if they would know, they would have known. They're sitting there out in the waiting room while we're BSing about Leo and his show.
Oh, I'm very honored. Anyway, that's nice.
What a great physician.
It's, you know what? It's gold if you could find a good physician, I have to say.
Yeah.
You know, I honor doctors. I mean, they're really, you know, they're serving humanity. But there is a variance in quality. And if you can find somebody great like Dr. Krause, stick with him.
Yeah, great guy.
Well, it's good to talk to you. Give him my regards. So thank you, Barry. I appreciate it. you never know when you're going to meet a fan. Or where. I hope he was dressed by the time they were talking about me. Let's go to, Joe on the line from Wickawachie, Florida. Hello, Joe.
Yeah, Wickawachie. You just caught me finishing my lunch.
Oh, sorry, Joe. Thank you for being patient. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. But you were talking earlier something about you were fasting.
Yeah, I don't want to make a big deal about it because I'm not a doctor and I don't know expert on this, but I've lately a lot of people I know have been doing this, what they call intermittent fasting, and it's been very good for me. It's been fine. And you know what's funny? When I first started, I might have heard you eating lunch, and my mouth would start watering, and my eyes would start watering, and I'd be in pain. But now I'm used to it, and it's fine.
Okay, because you love what I just finished eating. But
what'd you eat? No, tell me. I'm dying to know.
Okay, I can only tell you. Don't tell anybody else because it's kind of a secret item.
Yeah, okay? Yeah.
It's that Steak and Shake.
Oh, I love Steak and Shake.
Okay.
Oh, there's a Steak and Shake in Wickawachie. I'm on my way.
Wickawachie. That's where we get the mermaids.
I know where in Wickawachie. My friend Patrick Norton, who's from St. Louis, took me to Steak and Shake when we went out there to visit, and I've never had it since. But, man, that was good.
Okay, well, what this is, it's a secret item. It's not on the menu. Don't tell anybody because you've got to be approved to order it, okay? So I'm going to authorize you.
Oh, good.
It's called the 7x7.
7x7?
And it's 777.
That sounds very dangerous.
Nah. It's
seven what? Seven patties?
And seven slices of cheese.
Seven slices of cheese.
Plus your lettuce, tomato, mushrooms, onions, whatever else you want.
Just one bun with all that?
Yeah. Oh, it is so good. But.
You know, In-N-Out out here, our California In-N-Out will do that too. You can go up to 10 patties.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if I'd want to try that, but you can.
Yeah, because the big thing is you really got to be not horny.
Hungry. Hungry is the word you're looking for.
Yeah, when you get that. But anyways.
I'm hungry for a 7x7.
Yes, and it is so good. But anyways, back to my question.
Yes, sir.
I've got a Mitsubishi CPD70 printer.
Okay.
The die sub.
Yeah.
And I like it, but it only goes up to 6x8, and I want to get an 8x10 because I'm going to be doing a lot of fake magazine cover things.
Oh, how fun.
Yeah, because, you know, you can put somebody, I'm using green screen, so they're on the green screen. I already have the background.
Oh, you're going to do this like at an amusement park or something?
Yeah, like baseball games.
Fun.
And different events.
You know, so, I'm going to stop you right there. I know nothing about die sub printers.
Uh-oh. You know everything.
This is a great technology that gives you these great glossy images. In fact, it's, you know, a lot of photographers use them. But it's kind of a specialty product. I'm actually pleased to see that these Mitsubishis aren't as expensive as I thought they might be. $900. Anybody know about a large format? He wants a large format die sub printer. Chat room's good on this stuff. Hang in there and maybe we'll get an answer. And you made me hungry. And I knew that was your goal. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Only 3 seconds long. All right. So I wish I knew more about die sub printers. This sounds like a good little business. You go around to ball games and you take a picture of a kid and you put it on a green screen like he's at home base, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
What a great idea.
Or anything that you want in the background. The two that I'm looking at, there's a DNP DS80, which does it, and also one called, I think it's Sinfonia, Sinfonia.
I have no idea. You know, I wish I could help you. I don't. Anybody in the chat room have any? So what was the size you were looking for?
I want to do 8x10.
8x10. Yeah, because Mitsubishi only does 4x6. Yeah. Oh, no, it's a 6x8. 6x8. Full bleed.
Magazines are usually...
Yeah, 8x10. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see anybody in the chat room popping up either, but they're more interested in your 7x7.
Well, they got to try it.
Oh, I will. Next time in the Midwest, I'll try it. Absolutely.
You got to order it special, because it's not on the menu.
It's the same thing in In-N-Out. You have to know, but In-N-Out has a whole bunch of secret stuff on their menu. Like you can get them to cook the chili pepper, put the patty on a chili pepper on the grills, cook it right into the patty, and that's very good. There's all sorts of stuff like that. But yeah, they'll do 10 by 10, which really sounds like a recipe for disaster.
Oh, but it's...
You got to love ground beef if you're going to do that.
Oh, yeah, and have a good cardiologist.
Yeah. Yeah, somebody said that. That's a heart attack waiting to happen. Joe, great to talk to you. I'll look for you next time I'm out at Wikiwachee. I go to a ball game. Do you do minor league clubs?
Well, I'm just getting started with the whole thing, so I'm trying to get everything set up and then go present it to the different coaches and all and say, look, this is what
we
can
do. Great idea.
Do is fundraisers.
How much a print is that dice up?
It comes out to like under a buck.
Oh, that's not bad.
78 cents.
Oh, that's not bad. They look so good. That really is the way to get really nice glossy prints.
Yeah, because I've got regular printers, but the regular
printers
take too long.
No, yeah,
and
yeah.
These things can crank them out in less than a minute.
I was surprised to see you can get this Mitsubishi for under $1,000. But the real issue I thought was consumables, but that's not bad at all.
No, because it's just rolls of paper that you have, and you have the
right.
Dice up thing that goes like the old Kodak printers.
Right.
Where you just have the roll.
I used to have an old dice up printer for photos, and it was beautiful. It was really gorgeous. All right. I'm sorry I couldn't help you, but thank you for making me hungry.
All right. Have a great trip.
You too. Oh, thank you. I will. Have a great day.
All right.
Bye. Go Giants. Yeah. We'll have more Tech Guy in just a moment, but first a word from our sponsor, a company I love, I've been doing business with for some time. I first sent my spit to 23andMe several years ago. That's how they do it, by the way. And they sent me back a genetic report. Even then, it was fascinating. But now over the years, I've sent them one sample and they're continually adding to it. I'm learning more and more about myself. 23andMe. It helps you understand. It's named after your 23 pairs of chromosomes. So it helps you understand your DNA. And they have now 75 reports. It's easy to do, too. You get a little kit. It's just got a little violet that you spit into. That's all you have to do. Seal it up. You send it back to them. They'll send you an email saying, okay, your report's ready. Go online. And I check back all the time because they're always adding new stuff. Ancestry reports, including, by the way, not just your ancestry composition. So when I first did it, it said, you're Western European, whatever. And now it's like even more, like how much Neanderthal I have, how much English, how much Scot, how much Irish, how much French and Italian. I was shocked because my grandmother's Italian. I always thought of myself as kind of Italian. And it's like a small fraction of the total. I'm mostly English and Scotch because I guess I mostly got my mom's DNA, right? So it's just fascinating. You also get haplogroups, which tell you actually where your mother's DNA came from. I get this map of how my ancestors migrated from Central Africa up to Europe. And with a timeline, like how many years ago and all that. It's just fascinating. Yeah, you can also get the DNA Relative Finder tool, which is really cool. I found many cousins. In fact, one of the reasons I want you to do this is maybe you're my cousin. I want to find out if we're related. And so that list of people, because more and more people are doing 23andMe, is getting longer and longer. It's just fascinating. And you can contact them or not. You can have, of course, it's completely private. But I turned mine. I said, hey, if somebody wants to contact me, and I've gotten a number of messages through 23andMe from relatives, and it's so cool. You can learn how your DNA will influence traits, like how you respond to caffeine, your muscle type. Would you be a better long-distance runner or, shot putter? It's all in there. Your weight, why you weigh what you weigh. Well, a lot of that's genes, and that's in the analysis. That's the Wellness and Traits Report. Take a look at the carrier status. Now, this is a little more serious. In fact, you may remember the FDA said, hey, you know, if you're doing this, you need to have appropriate warnings and stuff. And so they've complied. This is completely compliant with the FDA. It meets all their requirements. But you can go on there. You don't have to find this out, but you can find out if you're a carrier for genetic diseases, cystic fibrosis, hereditary hearing loss. In fact, my dad is a carrier. That's how I got it. It's really interesting. Understand what makes you you at 23andMe. Get over 75 genetic reports today and start exploring your DNA at 23andMe.com/twit. Hey, maybe you're my cousin. 23andMe, you'll find out. 23andMe.com/twit. It's really fun, really fascinating. Get your kids to do it. It'd be a great gift for Father's Day. 23andMe.com/twit. Now back to the show. Kodachrome. I love that song, and that means one thing. One of the reasons I like it so much, we're about to talk about Kodachrome and all those nice bright colors with our photography guru. Chris Marquardt is here. He hosts the best photography podcast in the world, Tips from the Top Floor, and does great workshops. He's actually on a workshop right now. We're pre-recording this in Svalbard, up there by the North Pole in Norway. You'll find his workshops and his books and his pictures, and I hope lots of pictures from the North Pole when you get back at discoverthetopfloor.com. Hey, Chris.
Yeah, it's not quite the North Pole, but it's as close as I will ever get. Yeah. So
I think you need some pretty hefty equipment if you're going to go any farther north, at least until it melts.
And I think there's not a pole sticking out of the North Pole there. Anyway, so
sad to say, no. So every time you join us, you give us some inspiration, you give us some ideas. Of course, we're still in the midst of our photo assignment. We're all looking for pictures illustrating the word or concept take, which is about as abstract and nebulous as possible. But that's okay. It gives you full scope for your artistic expression. Take the picture, upload it to Flickr, put take in the tags, and submit it to our tech guy group. And when Chris gets back from Svalbard in another couple of weeks, we will do a assignment review. It's not a competition. It's just for fun. But really the idea is to get you taking pictures. We talked about that last week. Got to practice every day. Take pictures every day.
True.
What do you want to talk about
today? Even if you're shooting boring stuff.
That's why I don't. Because I'm bored with my day-to-day surroundings, right? And
you don't even have to post-process those. Just shoot them and look at the display and say, oh, okay, that composition is a nice one.
Well, it's also a lack of imagination on my part because, as somebody said, you can find the whole world in a grain of sand. There's plenty to see around you every day. You're just, boring. I'm just boring.
Give yourself an assignment. In the morning, say, today I will shoot a few round things or a few triangular things
brown
or
things.
A few blue things and so on. And
you already
have created a little goal for the day.
Brilliant.
So what I want to talk about today is wide angle.
Okay.
And that's because I'm in the middle of finishing that second book, which has taken longer than expected, but it's about wide angle. And I'm kind of knee deep into that whole topic. So why is wide angle challenging? And it is. People often want to go wide angle and say, wow, this looks cool. And then they get a wide angle lens and they're a bit disappointed that they don't get the kind of shots that they were hoping to get.
So first, and define wide angle so we know what is a wide angle. How wide is wide?
So if you look at the focal length that's written on the lens, if you have a full-frame camera, I'd say anything around 50 is in the middle, what we call normal, and then something around 35, 24, that's all wide angle. So and the smaller that number gets in millimeters, the wider angle is until you end up with the fisheye lenses that are like super, super wide angles. And from a degree point of view, I think a normal lens has something around 40, 45 degrees of angle. And the wider that gets, the more stuff you end up having in your photo. And that's one of the challenges. That's one of the problems. You end up just having more stuff in the picture. And that makes it harder to get a good composition because you have more things that compete with each other. That visually compete with each other.
And yet, wide angle is such a great look because it has a look to it. And it's fun because it's like a Bruegel painting or something. There's so much going on that it can tell a story.
Or an Escher painting sometimes.
Yeah.
You have this look that is not the normal way we see the world. Our eyes are not wide. Well, it's okay, this gets very deep, but our eyes are wide angle because we see about 180 degrees with our two eyes, but they aren't wide angle in terms of the magnification that we get. So that's a bit of a... Let's not go down that red hole. But with a wide angle lens, you end up having too many things on the frame in the beginning. And that makes it hard to make it clear what the picture's about. That makes it hard to have a clear subject. And it kind of forces you to work on your composition and look for places where you can make that work. Also, everything is going to be smaller. If you fit more stuff in the photo, then everything has got to be a bit smaller. And that's what wide angle does. Everything looks further away. So you have to get closer in order to get things bigger in the frame. Another thing that happens when you shoot wide angle is that it's more likely that you have very high contrast in your frame. Like imagine being inside a room and you take a photo with a telephoto lens, and that's very easy to get something in the frame that isn't very contrasty. But if you have wide angle, now you have the inside of the room and the bright windows, and that competes with each other. And it can be too much from a brightness different from a contrast point of view. I remember the old Twitch studio, you had these beautiful round windows. And I think, toned them down. You put some ND foil so in bright. The windows to make them a bit darker so that everything kind of fit together.
Yeah.
That's what happens when you have a wide-angle lens. You get stuff in the frame that kind of competes from a brightness point of view. And that you can also counter that by composing clearer and by adding light to the inside. If you make the inside as bright as the outside, then everything's fine. But that is difficult. That needs a lot of light. So a wide-angle indoors can be a challenge. And indoors photographers, like real estate photographers, will often use something that's called HDR to kind of bridge that gap of the contrast and make sure that everything kind of gets sort of equal attention. And then another thing that might happen with wide angle, especially when you have people in the photo, is distortion. And one kind of distortion is when you get really close to someone with a very wide angle lens. Well, big nose. That's the symptom you'll see, that they will have big noses because you have to get very close, and then that just happens. So if you can use this for comical effect, of course, but chances are you don't want that. So you have to watch out for that, especially what angle you shoot someone from, and maybe even change the focal length for something that's not as wide.
And never show the person the picture.
In that case, well, depends.
Sometimes they have a good sense of humor about it.
And there's one additional kind of distortion that wide-angle lenses have, and that's distortion towards the edges, because everything towards the edges gets stretched out. So if you have a person in a wide-angle shot and they are at the edge of the shot, towards the edge of the frame, there's a good chance that they will have a massive egghead. Their head will be very distorted. And the wider angle you go, the stronger that effect gets. So
actually, it reminds me, about 5 years ago, I was in Norway, where you are as we speak, for a photo conference in Christensen. And my friend Mikkel Oland, who's one of my favorite photographers, took a wide-angle photo of the dinner party at the end of it, and it's one of my favorite photos ever. And some of the you're right, on the edges everybody's distorted, but it does look like one of those paintings where there's so much going on.
It does,
and
yeah.
And its wide angle made it a very interesting picture, because it's a story in there, right? There's so much going on.
It's a bit like a Where's Waldo photo. Like, there's so much going on, you can actually explore that photo.
Yes.
And this photo works really well.
I agree. Yeah.
But
yeah,
there's a chance that if you're not an experienced photographer, you might need some practice to get to that point.
He kind of knows what he's doing. That's know what?
Good.
I'm going to make that my assignment today. Wide angle photos.
Good.
Yep. You're going to get me out there and I'm going to be taking pictures. We have an assignment I mentioned. Go out and take some pictures if you want of take or brown things or wide angle, but take pictures today. Chris Marquardt, I bet you, is taking a lot of pictures. He's up in Norway in Svalbard, but we pre-recorded this segment. Thank you for doing that, Chris. And you'll be back next week, I think, right? So you can tell us about your experiences with the polar bears.
We'll be back with stories next week, yes.
Awesome. right here on the Tech Guy Show. Find Chris and his work and his workshops at discoverthetopfloor.com. And we'll see you next week. Stay safe. Don't get in any fights with polar bears. More of your calls to come in just a little bit. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. We go back to the phones, and it looks like I got Frank on the line next from Tullahoma, Tennessee. Hello, Frank.
Well, hi, Leo.
How are you?
Talk to you.
Nice to talk to you.
You've been saving me for the last, ever since ZDTV days.
Oh, yeah, the good old days. Screensavers, for help.
Back,
yep.
Back when I was a retired aerospace engineer trying to learn about PCs.
Nice. Did you?
Oh, yeah. I spent the next 10 or 15 years as just a consultant, but you got me all from mainframes to PCs.
Oh, that's great. I'm thrilled to hear it, Frank. Thank you for
really useful.
Thank you.
Yeah, I got a minor little problem now that I hope you can help me with.
Well, I'll do my best.
I've got my new Windows 10 computer's screen is almost unreadable.
Oh, you know why they use these screens now are very, what we call high DPI, high dots per inch, or very high res.
Yeah, but the slight blue text on white screen.
Oh, it's a color issue.
Oh, sure, but these ancient eyes have trouble.
It's not the size of the text, it's the contrast.
Yeah, you know, I can always up the screen, you know, zoom in.
Well, I was going to tell you about that. Yeah, okay, good. All right. So there is, now I don't know, this might be too much contrast. But in the accessibility mode, there is a high contrast theme. And the nice thing about it is you can turn it on or off at will. So you don't have to leave it on all the time. But if you're having trouble reading some text in particular, you can choose the high contrast theme. You can turn it off with, get ready for this, left shift plus left alt right next to it. Plus print screen.
Yeah, well, if you got that many thumbs.
Yeah, you need, well, three will do. So there's two on the left shift and left alt, and then the print screen depends on your computer where it is, but usually it's kind of in the upper right. So it's like the three-finger salute, but instead of Control-Alt-Delete, left shift, left alt, and print screen, and that'll just turn it on temporarily. Now, if you like it and you want to keep it on, you of course you can change that in the settings. You just go into the, you know, right click on the desktop, say personalize, choose the theme you like, and then turn on high contrast mode, and that'll make it permanent. And that is exactly why they do that. It's for people who, you know, these young people today, they love the light gray text on the kind of the darker gray background. And you can't read it.
That's invisible.
It's invisible. They make the print too small, and then they make it too low contrast. So this is exactly why Microsoft does this.
Yeah, when us guys that do most of the writing, and we got to read the text, not the pretty screen.
Right. Pretty doesn't count. You need, so this is an accessibility, or as Microsoft calls it, an ease of access setting. You can actually turn it on. Like even before you get, you know, even during sign-on, when you go to the sign-on, you know, in the lower right, there's like a little, it's the ease of access button. It's kind of, I don't know, looks like a wheelchair or something. But you can click that and choose high contrast. That'll make it easier to sign on to. So this is all for people who, of a certain age, like you and me, who can't read those screens as well as we used to.
You'd think at Microsoft, I think they didn't have what they call a usability.
Oh, they do. They do. That. Oh, no, they do. And it's and it honestly, it is sometimes designers, I think. Well, first of all, they're young. They got young eyes. But I think also sometimes they favor form over function, you know? Was it Frank Lloyd Wright who said form should follow function? That the idea of a design is functionality should inform the design, should tell you, the designer, what it should look like. And I think sometimes designers forget that, and they care about how it looks more than how it works. So the good news is the other side of Microsoft, across the aisle from the designers, there's a very good accessibility team that is totally devoted to making Windows easier to use for people who have all kinds of accessibility issues. And so Microsoft, Apple does this too. In fact, some might say even does even a better job. But Microsoft has a very active, I remember talking to the advocate. There was a woman whose sole job across the whole company was to be an advocate, to go into every division and say, now let me see your accessibility plans. How accessible is this going to be? And contrast is a big one. All phones now will do this. Tablets will do it. And yes, Windows 10 will do it. Turn on high contrast mode. And that will really help you with that low contrast text. I really like it. I think this is a nice feature that they make it that you can toggle it. Because I don't know if I would want to operate in high contrast mode all the time. But left shift, left alt, plus print screen turns it on. Left shift, left alt, plus print screen turns it off. Ad hoc, as needed. Nice to talk to you. I'm glad things are going well for you in Tullahoma. Thank you, Frank. All right, let's get back to the phones. Nancy in Corona, California. You're next. Hi, Nancy.
Hello, Leo. Welcome.
Nice to talk to you. Thanks for calling.
Okay, I just, do you know anything, I know it's too soon yet, but do you know anything about the number eight iPhone coming out with Apple?
Yeah, no, I can tell you, I think the rumors are pretty accurate, so I can tell you what the rumors say. But remember that Apple does not pre-announce, that they wait until September to announce all this stuff.
Yeah, I know it's September.
Yeah. So here's what I think, and most people seem to agree this is it. There'll be three new iPhones. Remember, this is the 10th anniversary of
these.
So they want to make a big splash.
Okay.
So the rumor is that they, remember, they released a new iPhone last September, the iPhone 7.
Yeah, which I do not like.
Okay. They'll do a 7S. That will be just the same body, the same style, just an updated version of the iPhone. But then there'll be a third one, the 10th anniversary iPhone. We don't know what they're going to name it.
Okay.
But that one will be a super premium iPhone. May not be available right away. There's some concern about the materials involved because they say it will be an edge-to-edge OLED screen, very high-quality screen that fills the phone. Now, let me guess why you don't like the iPhone 7. Is it because of the headphone jack?
That's one of them, yeah.
So that's not coming back.
It's not?
I know. Hard to believe. My friend Neelai Patel, who writes for The Verge, says it was a user-hostile move, and I agree. But it didn't hurt sales. The iPhone 7 is the best-selling iPhone ever.
I know. A lot of people have them.
So Apple's just saying, well, I guess nobody wanted the headphone jack. They're wrong.
Yes.
There.
There's three coming out.
There's
7S.
Three. The 7S, the 7S Plus, and then whatever this new 10th anniversary iPhone.
I have a 5S, but I really like the 6. I would look.
You know, if you want a headphone jack, go the 6S, which is the last iPhone with a headphone jack, is just fine.
Yeah, I want to get one.
It looks just like the 7. I think if you want a headphone jack, you're going backwards, not forwards. You're going to want an older iPhone, not a newer iPhone. I see no evidence at all that Apple is going to put the headphone jack back. Remember, when they announced we're not going to do a headphone jack, they said this is an example of courage.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy is right. Courage. The courage to do bad work. I don't know. It's terrible. I agree. I agree with you.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Go back to, I think you'd be happy. Now is the time, too, by the way. You can still get 6S's. And I think
like where? New ones?
Yeah, brand new ones. I think even Apple sells them. Yep, they're still selling them.
Oh, and I'll go to the store and see.
Yeah, and many phone stores, too. And frankly, I have a good friend who is a total Apple fanatic, Alex Lindsay. And he bought an iPhone 7, and he's gone back to the 6S. Because he says, I have to have a headphone jack. I'm with you on this one. Now, we'll see. Maybe I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that I'm right. Leo Laporte, there's no headphone jack in the future. The Tech Guy. I'm pretty sure I'm right on that one. Oh, it went a little long. Yeah, isn't that awful? What's wrong with them? They're just crazy people. I don't know what's going on in there.
I don't get it.
They said they needed the room in the inside, but you know what? There's plenty of phones, including the new Galaxy S8 from Samsung, that have all the same features as the iPhone 7 and a headphone jack.
Really?
Yeah, nobody else is doing this. The only other people who are doing it are regretting it because their phones aren't selling. I don't know why. You know, it just shows that iPhone lovers don't care. They'll buy an iPhone no matter what.
Oh, I like them. They're for the dummies. Is the easiest
phone. Oh, they're fine. I have nothing wrong with them. But I agree with you. They should not have taken the headphone jack out. But don't. But I am absolutely convinced they'll never bring it back.
I believe you.
Sorry.
Okay.
Have a good one. It's nice to talk to you.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy. Thanks for hanging on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's get back to the phones. Teresa's been very patient in Long Beach, California. Thanks for hanging on. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure.
I'm a semi-professional photographer, and I go to events that I shoot professionally, but then there's some things that I go to that I'm not the shooter of record, and so I want to point and shoot. But I don't want to skimp that much on what I can do with it.
You know, you just don't want to bring a big interchangeable lens DSLR. No, you just want something you can keep in your pocket.
Exactly. So I'm looking at the Sony RX100 Roman numeral V.
Excellent camera. I'll give you one. It's by the way, pricey, right? $600 or $700.
Yeah. Well, no.
More?
Yeah.
Yeah, because, okay, so that's a one-inch sensor. You're used to, with your big pro camera, probably full frame or APS-C.
I shoot a Nikon 750D.
Okay, so you're used to full frame, and you're used to interchangeable lenses. But the Sony RX 100s, and you're getting the Mark V. I had the Mark III. You're getting the latest one. And by the way, you can save money by getting a 3 or 4. They still sell them occasionally. That is really as good as you can get with that Sony 1-inch sensor. They're very good. Another one I would look at, it's actually the one I bought for my upcoming trip, is from Panasonic. It's the Lumix LX10. And that is also a 1-inch sensor. 24 to 72 equivalent zoom. It does, you know, where it really sings is its video. It does 4K video.
Yeah, so does the Sony, though.
Yeah, no, the Sony's very good. The Panasonic's a little less expensive. That's the only reason you might look at it.
How's the zoom on the Lumix?
It's 24 to 72. The aperture range is a little faster, too. It starts at f1.4, goes up to f2.8. I would look at, there's a good comparison. If in November of last year, DP Review, one of my favorite sites, you're probably familiar with it if you're a photographer, did a review of the Lumix DMC LX10. And on that review, there's a table comparing it to the previous model of the RX100, the Mark IV, along with the Canon G7, which is another very popular point-and-shoot with the pros. Most pros carry around something like this because, just as you say, you can't always bring out the big camera. This is something you could put in your purse or pocket that gives you very good quality images. Not DSLR quality, but very good quality images. I would say the only reason to look at the Panasonic is to save money because it's a little bit less expensive.
Does the Lumix shoot in RAW, though? I see that.
Yes, it does.
Sony shoots RAW.
All of the ones I've mentioned shoot RAW.
Okay.
That's one of the, of course, professionals will say, I'm not going to shoot JPEGs. You got to give me RAW.
Yeah.
And that's
like
what
Sony
makes.
Shoots both at the same time.
Yeah, so does the Panasonic if you want. You know, just like your DSLR, you can say RAW, RAW plus JPEG. It's up to you.
Okay.
It uses SD cards. They're both very good. If I had unlimited funds, I'd probably get the RX100.
Okay.
That's a superb camera. And so remember, Sony makes these chips. I mean, these are their chips. They know better than anyone how to do them. So
great.
Yep. Highly recommend it. You picked the best, in my opinion. For a long time, it was Canon G7 series that everybody I knew, all the pros I knew, used. You know, they keep it in their backpack or their pocket. But now I think the Sony RX100 is really pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Yep. All right, Teresa. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Leo.
My pleasure. Good to talk to you. Thanks for calling. Let's move on to Ralph, Huntington Beach. Hi, Ralph. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I appreciate your recommendation for like to help my pastor set up a desktop setup with camera, mic, and software so he can do training, videos, Bible studies,
great,
things like that,
great,
at a desk.
Does he need more than one camera, like two shots, or is a single shot sufficient?
Single is fine.
Okay. You know, truthfully, we were just talking about point-and-shoot cameras. Almost all of them do superb video. But what you're going to look for is one that has a mini jack for the mic, because the on-camera mic is too far away. He'll sound like he's in a big echo chamber. You don't want that. What you want is a little mini jack on the camera that then can go to a wireless lapel mic, or what we call in the business a lavalier mic. It clips onto your shirt. That way he's mic'd close mic. He sounds like I do right now instead of like in a big room. And there will be a wire. You don't do wireless because it's very expensive and complicated. So that wired mic, Sennheiser makes some very good ones. Audio Technica makes very good ones. That wired mic goes to that camera, and that camera's on a tripod. And I would just record in camera. Then once you get the recording done, then you can take the SD card out of the camera, put it on your computer, and if you need to edit it, Adobe Premiere Elements, it's under $100, will let you burn a DVD or just create a file that you can distribute, put on the website, that kind of thing.
Okay. Now, is there any way to have this connected directly to a laptop, so it's recording on the laptop, and you'd have software so you'd see how you're positioned in the camera?
Yeah, you can do that. I mean, many of these point-and-shoots, you can flip the LCD around. I'm doing that right now, for instance. I can see the camera I'm looking at. I can see an LCD right next to it. It's small, but I can see it. And the advantage of that is that it looks like I'm looking at the camera. If he's got it on a laptop, he's going to look over to his left, and he'll be looking off camera all the time. I know, because I know how it is when you work at television. There's something about your picture on a screen that draws you. So whenever people are doing this, they try not to, unless you're very, you know, you've worked in TV for many years and you know better, they try not to put the monitor anywhere but right next to the camera. Otherwise, you're going to be looking off camera all the time. Now, if you want, yes, there are cameras. You're probably not going to use a point-and-shoot at this point. You're going to go out and buy a video camera. They're a few hundred bucks. Canon Vixia is what we use. I like the Canons. And they have, and many of these do, but you're going to have to look for this as a feature, live HDMI out. That means that when you're recording or when you're using the camera, the HDMI port is live. On some cameras, you only can use the HDMI port when you're playing back from the memory. But many cameras, including these Canon Vixias, the HDMI port is live just when it's recording. That way you can take that HDMI and put that in a laptop or put that in a screen, and he can see that. If you don't mind the fact that he's looking off camera a little bit.
Well, I was thinking put the camera just above the screen.
Yeah, there you go. You can put it on a big TV. So get a TV. And you can get a cheap monitor, you know, a 20, 30, 40, 50-inch monitor for a few hundred bucks. That's nice and big. You got the HDMI cable coming out of the camera. Camera's on the tripod, coming out of the camera, going right into the TV. And then if you get a Canon Vixia, I think they're about $600, $500. They also have mic inputs. In fact, some of the nicer cameras, if you spend a little more, will have a standard mic input, what we call an XLR or Canon plug input, that you can use a professional studio mic with. But frankly, if you just have the little mini jack, that's fine.
A couple of years ago, I think I heard you talk about a nice sort of a studio mic that was a USB connector that would connect.
Yeah, there are quite a few of those. My current favorite is probably from Shure, Shure, in the Motiv line, Motiv line. Those are quite good. I see a lot of people using microphones from a company called Blue, BLUE. I don't like, they have one called the Yeti. I really don't like it. It's a USB mic, but they have the Raspberry is quite good. So there are good USB mics. A little more tricky, though, to record to a laptop where the audio and the video are from separate sources. I guess you wouldn't have too much trouble syncing. That'd be another way to do it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls in just a bit. Hey, we'll have more with the Tech Guy in just a bit, but let me tell you a little bit about a company that makes the Tech Guy possible and empowers a lot of businesses with marketing, with training. It's Wistia. Now, I know, you know, businesses that want to do video on the web often, when you first start it, you go, oh, we'll just put it on YouTube. And then you realize real quickly, you know, our stuff doesn't really belong on YouTube. You know, the environment's very different. You don't want your employee watching a video to be segued into a bikini video. And you don't definitely don't want a potential customer. So that's why so many businesses now use Wistia. Businesses like Cirque du Soleil and Starbucks and HubSpot. Wistia is a video hosting platform that really gives you all the tools you need, analytics and video marketing tools to power creative communication. More than 300,000 businesses are now using Wistia. You get great analytics, heat maps, trend graphs, engagement graphs. You can, if you're using it for marketing, actually capture email addresses within your video. You get a customized player that's branded for your company. Using video throughout your business becomes really simple, and it integrates with the marketing automation software you may already be using, like Marketo. Wistia provides friendly support service people. They're available whenever you need it. They give you free resources to help you use video across your business. Even if you've never made a video before, they make it easy. You'll increase your visibility. You'll boost your conversion rates. You'll power your sales team. There's something about video that's really compelling. And this is a tool you could be using, and you can use it free right now at Wistia.com. Free for your first three uploads, advanced video analytics, all the features and integrations built in with business in mind. Wistia.com. Try it today. Wistia.com. We thank them so much for their support of the Tech Guy podcast. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Time to go back to the phones. And who's on the line? Why, it's Henry from Riverside, California. Hi, Henry.
How you doing, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
If I were any better, I'd be twins.
You know, I never knew what that meant.
Neither do I.
Yeah, but it's good. It's a good line. I like it.
I am very perturbed with Apple, however.
Oh, now what?
Well, I agree with your assessment of the new laptops.
Yeah, I've been mentioning this before, that I traded in my Touch Bar MacBook Pro. I wanted, you know, I always buy the latest and greatest, but I kept hitting the Touch Bar by accident. It never seemed to have any value at all, so I just traded it in for the one without the Touch Bar.
Well, I don't blame you. My favorite of all of them has always been the MacBook Air.
Oh, it's a beautiful machine.
And they don't make it anymore, and my original one began having battery problems, and I was looking around for a new one. I checked out the new laptops, and I said, oh, that bar in there, like Leo says, gimmick.
It's a gimmick. And now, if you can ignore it, you don't have to use it. My problem was I kept hitting it by accident.
I would do the same thing.
Yeah.
I just felt they were overpriced, so I bought one of the last MacBook Airs that was still available.
Good. You know why they discontinued the MacBook Air is the screen.
Yeah, I know.
There was a low-resolution screen, and they want to do Retina everywhere.
But I like convenience, and I like performance, and I got both from that computer.
You know, the MacBook Air was such a success that the entire PC industry imitated it. They created something called an Ultrabook, which was basically a MacBook Air.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody who makes Windows PCs made their version of the MacBook Air. Even Microsoft with its new Surface laptop. That's basically a MacBook Air with Windows.
Exactly.
So yeah, I don't, you know, remember that Apple is kind of, they're kind of, I think, very devoted to this idea that Steve Jobs brought to the company when he came back, that you shouldn't try to do too many things.
Well, that's nice, but that brings me to my next subject here.
Okay.
Since the last OS was downloaded to my desktop, I have been harassed about signing into iCloud.
Yes.
Now, I know that they want you to do the two-factor identification.
Yeah, they're requiring it. They're going to start requiring it.
That's what I heard.
Yeah.
And I understand it's by June 15,
yep.
Something like that.
Yep.
But And I will accept it because I agree that the extra security is terrific. But at the same time, I'm busy with about 100 other things right now, and I'm not ready to do it.
I don't blame you.
And they keep, when I try to sign in to my mail, they keep kicking me out and making me sign in again.
This is actually a big gripe I have with Mac OS as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's on iOS, too, is that for reasons I don't understand, Apple, more than anybody else, asks you to sign in again and again. And we, you know, on the iOS side, we have fingerprint readers. We are signed in, and they still ask you for the passwords way too often.
Exactly.
Now, my friend Steve Gibson is a security guru, says, well, we don't know, but I have to assume that Apple has a reason for this. They're not just randomly asking you for the password, that it is triggered by some potential security risk. And I do have to say, Apple's very good. They have very good security people, and they think long and hard about how to keep your data safe. So, I don't know why they ask for it so often, but I can only assume they're doing it for a reason and not just kind of randomness.
Well, all it has done is urinate me off.
I know, me too.
But
me too. In fact, I'll tell you what I did. I moved to Windows. I moved to a Lenovo laptop that is kind of like a MacBook Air, but with a much better screen and has a fingerprint reader, and it never asked me for a password. I like it.
Well,
and I feel very secure. I have the hard drive's encrypted. I have a strong, fingerprint protection. I have a strong password. I feel pretty good.
I have also followed your advice, and I've bought an upscale Chromebook.
Nice. How do you like it?
I'm trying to get used to that, but man, is there after?
I know it's not a Mac.
40 years of using Apple.
Yeah, it's not the same.
I am having a lot of trouble with the learning curve.
It may not be for you. The reason I recommend Chromebooks and I like Chromebooks is what a lot of people are doing these days is really living in the browser.
Uh-huh.
Computing has changed. One of the reasons I can use Windows, I'm not a Windows fan, but I don't really see Windows that much. I'm mostly in the browser. And so for somebody like that, a Chromebook is a good choice. It's just a browser. But it sounds like maybe you do more with your Mac than just live in the browser.
Oh, yeah, I do photography. I do music.
Yeah.
I do.
For those people, a Chromebook may not be the perfect solution because if you want to do photography, you can only do stuff you can do with a Google Chrome plugin or extension.
Mm-hmm.
There's a very good one called Polar with two R's, and a Google Photos has gotten better. But if you want anything more than that, you're going to be disappointed. I use Lightroom. I have to have a general purpose computer.
So do I.
Yeah. Similarly, if you're going to do music, what do you make music or listen to music?
Both.
If for listening, unless you're a Google Play Music subscriber, you're going to be frustrated because it only works with Google stuff. There's no Apple Music on a Chromebook. And for making music, there are some Chrome extensions, but there's nothing anywhere near as powerful as Apple's own homegrown stuff like GarageBand and Logic.
GarageBand is my Bible.
So you need a Mac, frankly. I mean, there are Windows programs. First of all, Lightroom. One of the reasons I was able to move to Windows is I live in Adobe Lightroom, and that works exactly the same on Windows as it does on a Mac.
Uh-huh.
Music's a little different, but there are lots of good Windows music programs that are comparable, like Fruity Loops, that are comparable to GarageBand. But that's a big shift for you. Yeah, I'm not surprised you weren't happy with a Chromebook.
Yeah, well, I'm still going to try to use it as much as I can. I can use it for banking and email and other things.
Use it for the things you do on the web and you want to do more securely. It's a very good choice for that.
Well, I appreciate it, and I appreciate you listening to my rant here.
Well, you hardly ranted at all, Henry. Come on, get angry. Come on now.
I wrote to
Tim Cook. Did you really?
And I did not receive a reply.
Oh.
Which
I'm surprised.
I am too, but at the same time, you know what? I don't believe Apple will ever be the same since Steve Jobs died.
No, I think that's pretty clear.
Yeah, I will buy the new iPhone X or 8 or whatever they're going to call it this next time. But for the rest of everything, I'm kind of holding off to see if they're going to recover.
I'm very happy with my new Lenovo Windows laptop. I hate to admit it because I'm an Apple fanatic. Well, Henry, it's very nice to talk to you. I couldn't agree more. Should point out they're a horrendously successful company nonetheless. See, you're still buying iPhones. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Winding down the show on this Sunday afternoon. Bruce is on the line from Colina, California. Is it Colina?
Colina.
Colina. Hi, Bruce.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks. Second time caller, long time listener.
And long time holder, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
Over the years, on my Mac, I've copied files and I've moved files and I've got them on a number of different hard drives.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking for something that I can kind of consolidate.
Yeah, this is not an uncommon problem. Photographers suffer this. Anybody who's got a music collection that spans a couple of drives suffer this. Generally, I would just say live with it, only because deduping always runs the risk, however slight, of deleting both copies of something you want. However, I am going to tell you about some deduping tools. Did you say Mac or are you on Windows?
Mac.
Yeah, that's what I thought you said. There's a lot of deduping stuff on Windows. I don't know on the Macintosh. Here's what I do. let me see if I can find. Lifehacker has an article. The best duplicate finding tool for the Macintosh. Let me see what they recommend. It's called Gemini. So I've not used this. It's only $10. If you have a OS 10.10 or later, you're going to want to use the new Gemini 2, although they offer the old Gemini as well. It's the Intelligent Duplicate File Finder. Now, the fact they use intelligent encourages me. Because what you don't want is a file deduper that bases it solely on the name of the file, because it's going to make mistakes, and or on just the file date. You want something that actually looks into the file. Now, it's going to run slower, but it's going to scan the files, and it's going to, in most cases, the best dedupers will do something called a hash. Well, they actually say, if this file is an exact duplicate, delete it. If it's not an exact duplicate, don't. I'll tell you where you get into trouble. I know people have big music collections, and they might have two songs with the same name, the same date, by the same artist, but one's live, one's studio. A bad deduper is going to delete one of those. A good deduper will say, well, I know it's the same name, same artist, same date because you bought them at the same time, but I can see it's not the same file.
Right.
So that's kind of what you want. Now, what kind of files do you have?
Everything from InDesign files, Photoshop files, pictures. I do use Lightroom.
Good. Yeah. Pictures are tricky because, well, Lightroom's a good example. You have the original photo, and then you have a modified photo. They may look kind of the same to a bad deduper, but Gemini is smart enough, even if, somebody in the chat room is saying, even if it's the same photo at a different resolution, it's smart enough to know.
Oh, okay. Good.
So they really are spending some energy kind of, and that's what you want. This actually looks like, I'm going to have to buy this because I've been living with it. Now, good advice from PC Guy 8888 in the chat room. Back up before you run it.
Yeah.
Because you don't know. Yeah. The good news is hard drive is cheap. Storage is cheap. So you're not doing this to save space, really. You're doing it. And I'm going to honor this because you're a little OCD. You don't like, and I'm with you on this, that just the notion that these duplicates exist bothers you. And that I hate seeing in iTunes a file with one in the name because that means it's the same as another one somewhere else. I don't like that. So I'm with you. I'm a little OCD too. I want to tidy it up, but it just, I got to say it's risky. Now, one of the ways Gemini gets around this is it actually doesn't, it takes advantage of the Apple trash. It doesn't delete anything. It just moves it to the trash. Where I would suggest you just leave the stuff in the trash for a while. Because it hasn't been deleted. Until you're sure. And then, you really kind of want to check. I don't know, you got to be careful. Photographers are a particular challenge, especially those of us who use Lightroom. Because there's a certain human ability that a program can't duplicate of looking at, I don't really need that. Those 14 copies of that photo. I just want the original. But a program may not be smart enough to do that. So most of the photographers I know just live with it.
Okay.
Because hard drives are cheap.
Yeah. Well, I have like about 4 or 5 hard drives, and I have... that's my problem, is I have duplicates.
I'm going to make one more recommendation, and I'm retaking this, rereading this PDF because I'm going on vacation, and I know I will come back with thousands of photos. And our friend Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, was on earlier, has a PDF that is so good that is just simply his triage method with photographs in Lightroom. I think he calls it 1,000 photos in an hour. But you can go to his website, chrismarquardt.com. And he was for a while, and I bet he's still doing this, if you sign up for his mailing list, giving this PDF away for free. But it's a very, you may have your own system. You may not need this. I did not. It's a very good system that encourages you at the end of every day, at the end of every photo shoot, to categorize and delete, prune your photos. And he's very good. He's got a very good system, which I adopted some time ago, and I'm planning to use religiously on this trip. Chris Marquardt is C-H-R-I-S-M-A, it's a little weird, marquardt.com. And if you go to shop.chrismarquardt.com, you can buy it there. Oh, no, it looks like he's offering it for free. Mike Mann in our chat room, yeah. So it's 1 hour, 1,000 photos. It won't solve this duplication issue, but it might help you it'll help the future Bruce. Future Bruce will say, thank you, past Bruce. Hey, I really appreciate it, and I'm with you. I just look at my stuff and I go, oh. And then I do stupid things. I was just going through my music, and there's an album in various artists, and there's an album at the root level. I just have copies of the same album. It's like, oh, please. And some of that comes from synchronizing folders, right? Because it looks, and it looks like, well, that's a different album, but it isn't. So I am going to get a copy of Gemini. I'll try it, but just back up. Be careful.
Okay.
Hey, it's good to talk to you. I'm so glad you hung on, Bruce. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, take care. Gemini looks like the program for the Mac. On the Windows side, there's 100. And the other thing I do use on the Mac that I really am a fan of is something called ChronoSync, ChronoSync. It's not free, but I think there's a free trial, and it's not very expensive. It is a folder synchronization utility. It's very smart. And I use that a lot if I want to do backups or, it's really a useful tool on the Macintosh, and I put that on every Mac. ChronoSync. I can't remember who makes that. It's not ChronoSync.com. It is Econ Technologies. econtechnologies.com. You know what? Why am I spelling it out? Everything we just talked about is available on our website. TechGuyLabs.com. That's the one you need to remember. It's free. There's no sign up. We just put it there as a community service. Although I encourage you, if you have thoughts, to comment there. TechGuyLabs.com. We'll do one final push before the end of the show right after this. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Waning moments of the Tech Guy Show. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. We have a few minutes left to take some calls. Let's do it. Why don't we do it? Going to San Marcos, California next. Sandy's on the line. Hi, Sandy.
Hi, how are you?
I am great. Thank you so much for hanging on.
Hey, no problem.
What can I do? It's been a while. How can I make you happy?
Okay, here's my question.
Yes.
In 2002, I quit my job up north and then put everything in storage. And what I have up there still is a Dell computer.
Yeah.
And this Dell computer came with all the books and stuff back then.
Yeah.
You know, so you could, I put more memory in it and I worked on it. But what my question is it really worth keeping my storage for this long?
Like, is that Dell worth it?
Yeah. Is the Dell worth?
What year was the Dell?
2000. 2001.
Let me just go to eBay and see how much a 2001 Dell computer is worth. Well, I probably don't have to. It's about worth $25.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. How about
it's not old enough to be an antique. It's just old. It may be in 100 years it'll be worth something again. What else do you have?
Okay. What else I have up there is, I know this sounds silly, but you remember the old laptops?
Yeah. How old?
You remember how thick they were and how long they were?
Yeah, see, no one wants those either.
And they took floppy disks?
Yeah.
And you're laughing, so that's...
Yeah, no, it's not worth... How much do you pay? $40 a month? $50 a month?
Storage?
Yeah.
Just went up to 80.
Yeah. So, let me put it this way. Those computers are worth less than 1 month's rent in your storage.
Really?
Computers don't retain value. There's no antique market for computers. No nostalgia. In fact,
I wasn't thinking antique with the Dell. I was thinking if I could upgrade it to something today's.
No, you can't. So, yeah, no, it's not. I'm sorry. It's gone. It's useless. It's old. Even if it ran perfectly, which it probably doesn't.
It did.
Did you, well, when?
Pardon?
When?
Well, when the last time I saw it.
Well, did you drain the oil out of the block and put it up, take the wheels off and put it up? I mean, you can't just leave a computer. It's not, even if it worked fine 4 years ago, doesn't mean it's going to work fine now. I hate to be the bearer of bad tidings.
I just needed to know.
Save your 80 bucks.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, computers. So I often think of, they always say dog years. Dogs, about 7 to 1, right? Every human year is about 7 dog years. So, if a dog's 10 years old, it's kind of 70 years old. Computer years, it's more like 15 years. So that computer is already 15 years. It's like a 225-year-old computer.
Oh, okay. Don't laugh at me.
I'm not laughing at you. I'm just saying. I think I probably would stop. I'm sorry. Yeah. No. I know. I should be like on Antique Roadshow. You bring in something like that on Antiques Roadshow. They wouldn't laugh at you. They'd just say, "Oh, well, no, it's not worth anything."
I just needed to know if it was worth saving anymore.
No, it isn't. It's and it's still too young to be a really great antique. But it's going to be a lot. The problem is they made millions of them.
I wasn't looking at the antique part of it.
Yeah,
but.
No. Just because it works doesn't mean it's worth anything, yeah. Because, I can go out and buy a $250 Chromebook. It's brand new. That's not 225 years old. It's just there's no market for old technology that just doesn't wear well. I'm sorry. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Lauren in Costa Mesa is next. Hi, Lauren. Are you there?
Hello.
Hey, welcome.
I'm here.
So your daughter's getting married in July.
Yep, July 7th.
And you want to embarrass her.
Hopefully.
So Kim said you have old tapes?
Yeah, I've got old drawings that she did with that DVD. I have cassette tapes that her singing. when she was 2 years old.
Oh, how fun. Well, even if she weren't getting married, it would be the clock is ticking. It would be absolute. And everybody who's listening who has anything, audio or video, on those old, you know, brown Mylar-backed tape, that stuff does not, yeah, it doesn't age well, because what happens is it gets brittle, and the brown stuff is iron oxide. It's a magnetic material. It starts to flake off. And those
anything that I can get off will be good.
Yeah, those cassettes are already of an age that it might very well be, as soon as you start playing it. Let's put it this way. You may only get one chance. You might be able to play it once. Right. What sometimes people do, and you can research this on the net. I've never tried it, but I've heard that when they're trying to recover old tapes. And by the way, you know, the Beatles, Sgt. Pepper is 50 years old. They were able to remix those 50-year-old tapes. I'm sure they've been stored perfectly at Abbey Road, but they're still able to get audio off of them. But a cassette that's imperfectly stored after a few decades, yeah, it's going to be tough. What sometimes people do is they bake it. They actually heat them up. And the idea, I guess, is that the heat, and by the way, I don't know how to do this. You should look it up before you do it. But the heat might kind of reseal the adhesive. But if you do that, that guarantees you only get one playback, and then that's it. So what you need is a cassette player. That won't be so hard to get. They're still out
there. One of the things I'm trying to find a decent one, because when I've looked on the web, a lot of the responses from people are that they don't work, or they have problems.
I should have asked our last caller. She had a cassette player in there with Adele. I imagine, I mean, I know you could still buy basically Sony Walkman. They're brand new. You know, if you go to eBay, what you'd really like is not a portable cassette player, but one of those old, you know, stereo component cassette players, like an Onkyo or a Denon or something like that.
I have one of those. I have one of those as part of the stereo system. I tried playing a tape in it, and the recorder player will not work, because apparently there's belts in there that are gone.
Yeah, stuff wears out. The belts, you know, stretch, so you'll get wowing. There's all sorts of problems. And nowadays, when they take cassettes or tapes and they digitize them, some of the best recordings in the world are still on, you know, tape. What they'll do is the tape, when it's recorded on a cassette or a reel-to-reel, there's a bias tone recorded. And if the tape is wowing or fluttering, the bias sound will wow and flutter. And what they do is they actually use that bias tone to correct any speed variations in the tape to get a good recording. There is, for $17.99 on eBay.
No, Amazon.
I'm sorry, Amazon. This is my studio engineer just passed this along to me. A audio USB portable cassette tape to MP3 player. It's designed for converting old tapes. And it's in $18. It's brand new. It's probably good enough to take old tapes of an 8 year old or 2 year old. Just search for Digit Now! ! And then cassette player. Digit Now! And cassette player, and it's $17.99 on Amazon. You know what? Don't spend more than that. But do this soon. Hey, I'm out of time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, thank you so much for being here. We'll see you next time. Don't forget, next week, Scott Wilkinson fills in for me on Saturday, and my friend Jason Snell from Macworld Magazine on Sunday, and I'll be back from vacation in a couple of weeks. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.